The robots started off, the regular thudding of their footsteps silent in the airlessness, for the non-metallic fabric of the insosuits did not transmit sound. There was only a rhythmic vibration just below the border of actual hearing. "Faster!" yelled Donovan. The rhythm did not change. "No use," cried Powell in reply. "These junk heaps are only geared to one speed. Do you think they're equipped with selective flexors?" They had burst through the shadow, and the sunlight came down in a white-hot wash and poured liquidly about them. Donovan ducked involuntarily. "Wow! Is it imagination, or do I feel heat?" "You'll feel more presently," was the grim reply. "Keep your eye on Speedy." Robot SPD-13 was near enough to be seen in detail now. His graceful, streamlined body threw out blazing highlights as he loped with easy speed across the broken ground. His name was derived from his serial initials, of course, but it was apt, nevertheless, for the SPD models were among the fastest robots turned out by the United States Robot and Mechanical Men Corporation. "Hey, Speedy!" howled Donovan and waved a frantic hand. "Speedy!" shouted Powell. "Come here!" The distance between the men and the errant robot was being cut down momentarily, more by the efforts of Speedy than the slow plodding of the 50-year-old antique mounts of Donovan and Powell. They were close enough now to notice that Speedy's gait included a peculiar rolling stagger, a noticeable side-to-side lurch. And then, as Powell waved his hand again and sent maximum juice into his compact headset radio sender in preparation for another shout, Speedy looked up and saw them. Speedy hopped to a halt and remained standing for a moment, with just a tiny, unsteady weave as though he were swaying in a light wind. Powell yelled, "All right, Speedy, come here, boy." Whereupon Speedy's robot voice sounded in Powell's earphones for the first time. It said, "Hot dog, let's play games. You catch me and I catch you. No love can cut our knife in two, for I'm Little Buttercup, sweet Little Buttercup. Whoops!" Turning on his heel, he sped off in the direction from which he had come, with a speed and fury that kicked up gouts of baked dust. And his last words as he receded into the distance were, "There grew a little flower neath a great oak tree," followed by a curious metallic clicking that might have been a robotic equivalent of a hiccup. Donovan said weakly, "Where did he pick up the Gilbert and Sullivan? Say, Greg, he's drunk or something." "If you hadn't told me," was the bitter response, "I'd never realize it. Let's get back to the cliff. I'm roasting." It was Powell who broke the desperate silence. "In the first place," he said, "Speedy isn't drunk, not in the human sense, because he's a robot, and robots don't get drunk. However, there's something wrong with him which is the robotic equivalent of drunkenness." "To me, he's drunk," stated Donovan emphatically, "and all I know is that he thinks we're playing games, and we're not. It's a matter of life and very gruesome death." "All right, don't hurry me. A robot's only a robot. Once we find out what's wrong with him, we can fix it and go on." "Once," said Donovan, sourly. Powell ignored him. "Speedy is perfectly adapted to normal Mercurian environment. But this region," and his arms swept wide, "is definitely abnormal. There's our clue. Now, where do these crystals come from? They might have formed from a slowly cooling liquid, but where would you get liquid so hot that it would cool in Mercury's sun?" "Volcanic action," suggested Donovan instantly, and Powell's body tensed. "Out of the mouths of sucklings," he said in a small, strange voice, and remained very still for 5 minutes. Then he said, "Listen, Mike, what did you say to Speedy when you sent him after the selenium?" Donovan was taken aback. "Well, damn it, I don't know. I just told him to get it." "Yes, I know, but how? Try to remember the exact words." "I said, Speedy, we need some selenium. You can get it such and such a place. Go get it. That's all. What more did you want me to say? You didn't put any urgency into the order, did you? What for? It was pure routine. Powell sighed. Well, it can't be helped now, but we're in a fine fix. He had dismounted from his robot and was sitting back against the cliff. Donovan joined him and they linked arms. In the distance, the burning sunlight seemed to wait cat and mouse for them, and just next to them, the two giant robots were invisible but for the dull red of their photoelectric eyes that stared down at them, unblinking, unwavering, and unconcerned. Unconcerned. As was all this poisonous mercury, as large in jinx as it was small in size. Powell's radio voice was tense in Donovan's ear. Now, look, let's start with the three fundamental rules of robotics. The three rules that are built most deeply into a robot's positronic brain. In the darkness, his gloved fingers ticked off each point. We have 1. A robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. Right. 2. Continued Powell. A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Right. And 3. A robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws. Right. Now where are we? Exactly at the explanation. The conflict between the various rules is ironed out by the different positronic potentials in the brain. We'll say that a robot is walking into danger and knows it. The automatic potential that Rule 3 sets up turns him back. But suppose you order him to walk into that danger. In that case, Rule 2 sets up a counter potential higher than the previous one, and the robot follows orders at the risk of existence. Well, I know that. What about it? Let's take Speedy's case. Speedy is one of the latest models, extremely specialized, and as expensive as a battleship. It's not a thing to be lightly destroyed. So? So, Rule 3 has been strengthened. That was specifically mentioned, by the way, in the advance notices on the SPD models, so that his allergy to danger is unusually high. At the same time, when you sent him out after the selenium, you gave him his order casually and without special emphasis, so that the Rule 2 potential setup was rather weak. Now hold on. I'm just stating facts. All right, go ahead. I think I get it.